Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome into MyW Sports, Sports Monday on this very first Monday of December. Luis Sanchez, Kyle Westcott, Erica Ayala should be joining us shortly. Kyle, it's been an exciting week in sports, and I know you're excited to get to our show, but tell me how your week has been. We have a lot to get to.
Well, I mean, I'll start with the weekend. It was incredible to see both the NWHL and the CWHL in action. And when we're talking about going out and fans, go see these games, I mean, if you missed any of these games this past weekend, you had some unbelievable action, and we're going to get to that all today.
Absolutely, and you talked about hockey. There were some great basketball games on, a lot of volleyball on, which I know we'll get to a little later. But, yeah, some incredible things. You have a new NCAA College Cup champion. As Kyle alluded to, CWHL weekend wrap-up coming up, NWHL news, NCAA hockey. It's been, I don't even know what kind of year. It's been an up-and-down year for the top and bottom teams. Good to see the parity in the game. I know that's a tough word, but it's great to see the competition, I guess, is better. But again, NCAA basketball, and again, stick around later on for our volleyball special with Kyle Westcott and myself. But let's swing it over to Kyle for the fun fact of the week.
Yeah, fun fact of the week. Actually got to see one of these with two wins this weekend for the Boston Pride. They have now won 19 straight games, and that passes the 1992-1993 Pittsburgh win, previously the most in professional hockey. So congratulations to the Boston Pride for the winningest, the most wins consecutively in professional hockey.
That's awesome. And you know what, Kyle? That streak can't continue. They are on winter break, but, I mean, 19, let's double that, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no end in sight, in my opinion.
And Erica's not here right now, but around the leagues, we have some National Pro Fast Pitch. If you remember that interview with Sherry Kempf, of the commissioner of NPF, the National Pro Fast Pitch, she talked about expansion. We'll try to get to some more details as talks become to, you know, begin to heat up on that. We also have some NWSL expansion talks, which have come to light this past week, and we know that there have been some expansion talks for the league as well, and some Canadian women's and the Canadian Women's Soccer League, they're deciding to unionize. The big news coming out of Team Canada right now, so we'll get to that a little bit later. But let's start with some hockey. It's been an action-packed weekend with both professional and college hockey. Let's start with the CWHL. Kyle, we both were able to see the Boston Blades this weekend take on one of the top teams in the CWHL, and Les Canadiens de Montreal. And I think it went as expected. If you remember, our listeners, if they remember, we had an over and under bet on the scoring in this matchup. And I think, Kyle, you were the winner?
I was the winner. I don't know if I'd call it chicken, maybe a poutine dinner. Winner, poutine dinner. I had the over of over 11, and this past weekend, not to my enjoyment, I'm not sure, because I never like to lose, but they did lose both 5-0 on Saturday and 10-0, which I happened to be watching live on Sunday. So it was a joyous occasion for me to win. I always enjoy winning. It's one of my faults, but it was also a painful weekend as a Blades fan.
And, you know, I think it's no surprise to some of our fans that we're based in Boston. You know, we have some Boston bias. And let's first talk about that first game, Kyle, because, you know, for the Blades, for the most part, at the beginning of the season, it was always that second game where they played, you know, much, much better. But in this matchup, it was the first game where they played really well. And, yeah, 5-0 is a tough score to say, hey, they played really well. But in a second period against a team that, as you mentioned, scored 10 on them the next day, they shut down Montreal. They held Montreal, although Montreal won the shot count 13-2, they held them off the scoreboard. And it was a 2-0 lead going into the third. Boston just couldn't find their offense. Lauren Dam, she only made 26 saves, which is one of her fewest of the season against Les Canadiens. But they did get three more. Poudry scored her second goal of the season, her second goal of the match. Carolyn Ouellette, she's been phenomenal. We'll talk a little bit about her in a second. But she scored a shorthanded goal for her ninth goal of the season. And just 51 seconds later, Anne-Sophie Batez, she scores her sixth of the year, another shorthanded goal on the same penalty. So I'll tell you what I saw, Kyle. I saw a better defense in game one. I was wondering where the offense was coming from, and they shut down Megan Greaves on the wing, which is what you do to kind of prevent her from scoring. So I didn't see anybody else try to step up in that matchup. What were your thoughts?
And I think that's key here. We have to remember that, yes, they were down 2-0 after about a minute into the game, but they didn't give up another goal for 39-plus more minutes until they went to the third period. So defensively, I agree. I think that they played very well against the best that the Les Canadiens have to offer. I mean, they had Bonnet in goal. They had Marie-Philippe Poulin shooting on Dahmer the whole time there. And they were able to hang in there. And you know, it was nothing, as you said, going into the third period. So, you know, I do think that this was a better outcome for them than what we've seen, and I would say even what I expected in this game. But you're right, there needs to be more offense. There needs to be somebody else helping out Greaves on the offensive end, because there's no control of the puck in their own in the offensive zone. They're getting the puck into the zone, and they're not able to really control it and pass it around. What I saw, you know, on Sunday was a team that just, when they're 5-on-5, when they're full strength, if they dump it in, the Les Canadiens are able to get behind the net and disrupt any sort of movement of the puck for the Blades. And they really need to work on having either some more option coming out of the backside of the goal, or just being able to really fill the lanes and just attack the net without going behind the back of the net. And they need to pick which team they're going to be.
Take a second to welcome in Eric Ayala. Obviously, great to have you back, EA. We're talking about the Blades and Les Canadiens. It was obviously Kyle who was the winner of our little podcast wager, so he's been gloating a little bit. But we're talking about this game.
Are you really winning there?
No, and that's what I said.
The home team.
it was a win, but it was not an enjoyable win, that's for sure.
Fair enough.
Absolutely. So, but Cal, in that second game, you saw a different Les Canadiens team. They put 61 shots on goal. Now, before we get to the goal scorers, this is all done without Marie-Philippe Poulin. I mean, this team, their depth is one of the things that makes them so great, isn't it, this year?
Yeah, and I mean, I would say that their goaltender, Heron, did a great job as well, but I'm not 100% sure because she only had to see 5 shots. So, I mean, she looked solid. She stopped everything that came her way. But again, if the Blades aren't going to attack offensively, you know, you're not going to be able to beat very many, if any, of these WHL teams without scoring goals. I mean, we've talked a lot about how much of a good scoring team the Inferno are, the Thunder are, the Les Canadiens, and I even say Toronto, and we'll talk more about them in a little bit, they're going to score continuously as well. And so if you're not putting goals in, you're not going to be able to compete with the CWHL teams.
Now, in this matchup, Kaitlyn Ouellette, she had 4 goals. That moves it to 299 career CWHL points, which is the most all-time. She's 1 point away from an amazing plateau of 300 career points, which, you know, I guess is something that we didn't really hear much about coming into the weekend. But is it because of her great weekend, Kyle? Because she also had a goal in game one.
Yeah, I mean, when you put up 4 goals in a game, milestones are going to come much quicker than you expected. So I don't know that they expected it to be this soon. But, I mean, she just had such a dominant performance on specifically on Sunday that, you know, you have to just tip your cap to her because she was amazing on Sunday.
EA, when you have somebody on the verge of this kind of momentous occasion, do you think, I mean, the next matchup we're going to see, I believe, is Calgary versus Montreal at the Bell Center.
Yeah. I think, I mean, if the question is, you know, what is the protocol, I think everyone kind of handles it differently. As a competitor, I mean, you want to get the... You want to get the record, I'm sure, but you don't want it given to you. And, you know, if this were baseball, you know, no one really wants to be that guy. Or in softball, you know, that woman who gives up, you know, the career home run. So, I mean, I don't know. I think it's one of those things that once it's done, she'll be happy that it's done, so then she can just focus. But the way she's been playing, I don't know that whatever her particular stance is on it, I don't know that it will matter, nor will it matter how the other team feels about it, because she's on a tear.
That's true. I mean, one of the coolest moments I ever got to experience was calling a BC game with Emily Falzer about to hit the 100-point club. And, you know, as a defense player, she did it from the blue line, and you know, it was incredible to do a goal call for Emily Falzer from the point for her 100th career point at BC. That you know, so I can't wait to hear this game and the goal call and you know what happens. As you mentioned, there are times where competitors kind of pause for a moment to celebrate what an occasion means to the game, and I think that's what will happen here. I'm really excited to watch this game against Calgary and Montreal. Calgary actually had the weekend off, so they'll be very well prepared for this Montreal team.
Yeah, and we'll talk a lot about Emily Falzer and perhaps even ceremonial moments in sport when we get to the other hockey league in North America.
Absolutely. So, Kyle, anything else you wanna touch on before we move on from the Blades and Les Canadiens? Because I had quite the game between Brampton and Toronto.
No, I would say I think it's a good opportunity for Les Canadiens to get back on the offensive side of hockey, heading into questionably, arguably the best game, best matchup that they're gonna face. They haven't faced Calgary yet. And hopefully they can carry over some of these goals into next weekend when they face the Inferno.
Absolutely. It's going to be a really exciting matchup to watch. Catch the action on mywsports.com or at mywsport on social media. All right. So, Kyle, I mean, you know Brampton and Toronto are rivals. They're so close to each other. They're not really big fans of each other. These two teams played an incredible game on Saturday, and it, you know, the Thunder, a lot of people had them kind of written off after their start, but it seems like they've gotten their, you know, they're clicking on all cylinders now. Liz Knox, she was phenomenal in net. The Thunder outshot the Furies 36-20. Brampton took a 2-0 lead. Beck and Knight made it 3-1 in the second. But then, you know, the Furies, they're not a team that are going to give up really, really quickly. So Nat Spooner, she comes back into the matchup and brings the Furies within one. But Laura Stacey, who scored the first goal, she scored her second of the game, but then kind of put it away at the end. Now, I want to talk about this game, but there was also something that happened towards the end I'll get to. So first, let's talk about the game. Kyle, we kind of read off the Thunder a little bit it seems like they're starting to click a little bit now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why anybody would. I think when they get their offense going, they're a very strong team. And again, I go back last year, and they were very close to knocking off Calgary in the semifinals going for the Clarkson Cup last year. So I think Brampton is a very good offensive team. And I don't think that Knox has played her best in goal so far this year. And if she can turn that around, and if she can become the consistent force that she can be, they're going to hang in there with every team, whether it's Montreal or Calgary or Toronto.
And Kessler, she picked up the loss in this matchup, getting a lot of shots on net. We talked about Kessler, especially in that matchup against Les Canadiens. Seemed like she was playing really well. Did the Thunder kind of scout her enough? Well, they obviously scouted her enough, but what did they do kind of to put 36 shots on net?
Well, I just think that's their MO, is to put on net and make the other opposing goaltender make the stops. And if they can get their offense going, they're going to put up 30 plus, probably closer to 40 shots every game. And that's how they're going to score a lot of goals.
Absolutely. So, all right. So I alluded to it a little bit. Things got a little physical in this matchup towards the end. There was some roughing penalties with just over a minute left. With 10 seconds left, there was a big hit in front of Liz Knox with Michaela Kava and Courtney Burchard going to the box for some roughing penalties. And then after the whistle, things got a little hectic and chaotic in front of Liz Knox yet again, resulting in 4 penalties after the whistle for Toronto and 4 penalties after the whistle for Brampton. And 5 in total, 2 of these other penalties is what I really want to get into. Michelle Saunders and Liz Knox, they were given major misconducts after the game for contact to the head. It seemed like someone was chirping, and then the players got together. There was some pushing and shoving. Liz Knox kind of took exception to it and left her crease. And I put this in our rundown, but quote unquote, I didn't know there was a penalty for quote unquote goalie leaving the crease. But she was trying to defend some players in her defense. She was going through some players' defense. But these two players, Michelle Saunders and Liz Knox, they were actually suspended for game 2. Now, this is the first time I've kind of seen this take place besides in the NWHL with the new regulations and the player safety committee that's been put together. So wanted to get both of your thoughts on kind of, I don't know if you've been able to catch up with this or what, but thoughts on the physicality between Toronto and Brampton.
Well, I thought that Canadians were polite. What happened with what happened with this? There's an old time hockey fight here going on. No, I just think that, as you said, people got frustrated, and you're going to defend your teammate. And I don't blame either Saunders or Knox for coming and defending their teammates. Maybe they should have done it in a different way. Maybe you don't, make contact that's going to get you suspended, but you have to defend your teammate. You know, if there's going to be some sort of altercation or roughing that is going to put somebody else, one of your teammates, possibly in an injury situation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like I did know, though, that a goalie leaving the crease was a penalty. I don't remember where that came from. I want to say probably watching the Rangers or something in passing. But I think I agree with Kyle. Excuse me. Hockey is a physical game, and you're always going to want to protect your players. And there's some chirping and stuff that I want to talk on the W side. So not seeing the game, it's hard for me to comment, but I think it's admirable to stand up for your teammates. And usually it's the goalie that's being protected. They're usually in a vulnerable situation if they're trying to cover the puck or make a play. So to see a goalie kind of standing up for their teammates, again, not having seen the play myself. I would just add that to the conversation, that it's kind of cool to know that your teammates have your back. However, it seems like things got a little out of hand, and you got to remember that there's still a game to play, and you put your team in a really bad position if multiple people are taking penalties and the game is just out of control.
Yeah, and it looked like in that second
league,
game.
I think that's why the league had to go with the game misconducts for Saunders and Knox, is this happened right at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't that opportunity to kind of keep people off the ice to quell it at the end of the game. And what they didn't want was some retaliation next game or some issue the next game, which unfortunately we saw in the NWHL last year when things weren't handled this way and penalties weren't assigned that probably should have been. So I commend the CWHL for taking action the way they should have.
And EA, I'll put this on you. The rapid response, are you with that as well? The very next game, instead of waiting after the series and the next series to suspend a player, you're saying, hey, no, we didn't like how this happened. You're not going to play this very next game.
Yeah, I think you have to, as Kyle said, you definitely have to quell it and to stop the bleeding, so to speak, and just remind players that they are expected to be professional. I think as a player, you can take that any number of ways, but again, you have to know that if you're going to get into it, if you're going to, mix it up, so to speak, that there are going to be repercussions, and you have to think about where your team is positioned. Maybe this doesn't matter so much just because of where we're at in the season, but as a team, you have to find ways to be able to have someone at least to be the voice of reason, and just honestly, as professional athletes, even getting under someone's skin, chirping someone, or getting in their face, that's all strategy. And so I think you got to remember that and just make sure that you're using it appropriately. Sometimes you need to get aggressive and let people know they're not going to be able to push you around, but you also have to do that, again, within the context of the game and your season.
Absolutely. That's a great point. I think that's exactly why Liz Knox kind of took exception to it in particular, because, all night she's getting these extra hits after the whistle and some of her own players getting pushed into her own net, So I was able to watch the game for the most part, and you can tell that frustration takes place in a lot of sports, not just hockey, but that's kind of, that's to your point, EA, is knowing that, your sisters have your back on that one, and no matter what, when you see a goalie come out of their crease, you always hope for some excitement, and Liz Knox provided that. Unfortunately, in the next game, it kind of took its toll on Brampton, as Kelly Terry of the Fury scored 24 seconds into the first period, and Brampton, the Thunder, could not take themselves out of that early hole, falling that second game 4-1. So these two teams split, obviously rivals, obviously two teams in the mix for the playoff spot later in the season, most likely for seeding purposes, but before we move on to the NWHL, both your thoughts on as we move forward and getting into this holiday break, where are these teams in the playoff picture for you two?
Well, unfortunately, I think we know the top four. When you look at the standings, there's just not time. There's not room. Sorry for the Blades to make a comeback here and make it in. So I think we know the top four. I think it's going to be a matter of, especially next week with Calgary and Montreal going head-to-head, we'll get a little bit more clarity on one versus two. But I think you're still going to see those two 1-2 and Toronto and Brampton 3-4 somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I think it's just a matter of, as far as 3-4, again, now these teams have a little bit of bad blood. Who's going to stay composed? Who's going to play to the game plan? And not only when they're playing each other, but throughout the season, because those kinds of things, those missteps, they can cost you. And maybe you get a match you don't necessarily want. Able to keep composure. So I think it's going to be important for both teams to just buckle down and move forward. You got your frustration out, and now you move forward.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, even on the physical part of that whole you know, chaotic scenes. Those are things that you don't remember. If you're Brampton and you're on home ice and you think about, oh man, you know, we had to lose players to this, or even on vice versa, if you're Toronto, those things come back in the playoffs. And when it gets physical, you're going to bring up these games from the regular season and say, hey, you remember that one? So I agree with both of you, though. I think we know the top two. It just, again, it's going to depend on seeding, and you know, 3 and 4, we know, and it's just going to depend on seeding. So, but who knows? That, I mean, we saw Toronto take down less Canadiens. We've seen Calgary lose a couple of games this year. When it comes to the playoff time, anything can happen. And we saw, as EA talked about, the physicality and some chirping going on in some NWHL games this weekend. EA, you are at the Buffalo Buttes and New York Riveters game. Tell us your thoughts about it, and again, mention what you were talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, let's just, you know, cut to the punchline. This is the Buffalo Buttes defeating the New York Riveters in Newark at a score of 5-3. New York did not start well, and Buffalo came out guns blazing, which I think was surprising. Maybe not so much as far as the Riveters. They've had trouble in the opening 20 minutes, sometimes even the opening 10 minutes of a match, whereas the Buttes are team that really can burn you in the third period, but they came out with some fire. We saw the power play was really not working particularly well for either team, and some early mistakes. But we see it's Devin Skeets and Jackie Greco who score in the first within a minute of each other, almost exactly, to get Buffalo up 2-0 early. Alexa Gruschow got a power play goal to get the New York Riveters back in it. And then we see the Riveters, Madison Packer and her line tied up in the second. However, Emily Falzer, with her first goal of the season, gets the Buffalo Buttes on top before the end of the second period. And then it was D'Arcangelo and a Bozek blast. Oh my gosh, it was a beautiful goal. It was absolutely beautiful. That ultimately ended up being, you know, the coffin for the Riveters. Katie Fitzgerald, the 5 goals. So not what we've seen from her. But what I wanted to talk about as far as chirping going off of the last game that we talked about for the CWHL is there was a point in the game where Rebecca Russo, right up against the birds in front of the Buttes bench, and something happened, and I was speaking to another writer who said that someone from the Buttes bench presumably yelled something as far as an instruction, maybe, you know, behind or watch or, you know, one of those things that you often hear on the ice. And obviously that player was not on the ice, and this particular player who the other writer thinks it was not even in the game, didn't play in the game. And then this particular player not only said this, threw Russo off, but then kind of laughed about it. And, you know, when is the point where you take gamesmanship too far? Obviously distracting a player. I didn't particularly like that story. Talked to Russo a little bit after. She didn't get into any specifics, but did say that she was being chirped from the bench, and she was pretty ticked off about it. And my question to you both is, you know, distracting a player when you're not even in the game, what are your thoughts about that? Is that just trying to put your team in a good position, or is that going too far?
I think that there is a point where it goes too far, and you're right. I think if it's come from the bench, I think that's something completely different. Now, if you and I are going for a breakaway, obviously you would be ahead of me because you're faster, EA. if I'm yelling at you or if I'm hitting you on the side, you know, that's one thing. But with something coming from the bench, you know, I do agree. I think that might be a little too much. I mean, I think back to, I know this is a baseball reference, but I think back to Alex Rodriguez yelling at the third baseman that he has it, and the third baseman drops it as Rodriguez rounds the bases. You know, I think that those things are just, they're childish, they're immature, they're not really part of the game, and I don't think it should be a part of the game.
All right. So I guess I'm on my own little island on this one, because I actually love the chirping. I mean, when you think about some of the greatest games that we've been able to see, there have been some incredible matchups and some incredible talent and incredible athletes who don't always play nice. I mean, think about Candace Parker in that WNBA Finals. She was tired of her critics, you know, and during every made bucket, you heard her chirping. You heard the bench kind of saying what they had to say on those little sideline cams that ESPN has. And I think it adds something to the game. And yeah, you know, there is a point, I agree, that you could take it too far. But I don't know. I think that there's a part of it where you want to distract. You know, that's mission accomplished. If you're on the bench and you know your role is not going to get, you know, you're going to get like a couple of minutes of ice time, if that, then play your role on the bench. Don't just sit there and be quiet and cheer on your teammates. Then try to distract players. Try to get your team an advantage somehow.
Yeah, and I hear that, and I'm here for it, but there's a difference between encouraging your team and yelling things, even profanities, like, yeah, get the F out of my space, stuff like that. That stuff happens. Trust me, I was one of those players. I'll throw an elbow, I'll drop my shoulders, no problem. Here's the problem that I do have, though. If you are again, not in the play, and this has happened even in my women's beer league, you know, you're not in the play and you're calling out something where that's usually used as a direction to keep people safe, and you have that person stop and then they get hit, they get blindsided. That's extremely dangerous, number one, unnecessarily so. And number two, I think it is extremely poor sportsmanship. And number three, you're not even giving that person the opportunity to one-up you. The best players, I love players like, I've said that, I believe, on the podcast. I do not like how Megan Duggan plays on the ice, as far as she is that kind of Candace Parker player. She plays aggressively. She gets calls to go her way, and she just gets under your skin. I think Madison Packer is that way for a lot of people. But there is a difference between being aggressive, playing your aggression, and owning up to it, taking hits as well as giving them, as opposed to what I feel is really stepping out of bounds, being, as Kyle said, extremely childish and putting another player in a really bad position. I don't think there's any room for that. And it's kind of, you know, I feel like it's kind of a punk. It's a punk move. You know, you're being a coward. You're not even, you know, in a situation where you can defend whatever you're doing, because you're not in the game and you want to play that. No, stay focused on your team. And then to laugh about it, allegedly, I don't know if this really happened. I'm just saying what I heard and giving this as a scenario. I don't know. That's just, that doesn't sit right with me. I don't like that. Give me like a Duggan, give me a Skylar Diggins all day, because you know what? Even if they are talking and they're running their mouth, they're scoring. They're setting their players up. They might get a little heated and stuff, but I've never seen and I've never heard or read that they're the kind of player that would intentionally distract a player in a way that's outside of what is traditional gamesmanship.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you, EA. I just think it's over the line, and you know, let the players play, and then go out on the ice and prove it.
Exactly.
You know, like you said, I don't mind if Duggan's doing it. I don't mind if Candace Parker's doing it. They're doing it on the on the floor or on the ice, and proving capable of backing up the talk as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. I get that. And EA, to your point, I agree. When it's something that can hurt, you know, or cause injury, 100% on board with you. And Kyle brought up the great example in baseball. I coach youth baseball. And one of the things that I saw, you know, when I first started coaching was players trying to distract other players from making plays. And, you know, I'm all for the bench maybe kind of, you know, making a noise or something. But if you're getting close to somebody and you're kind of at the risk of making them get hurt severely, I'm not about that, and I'm with you on that. That's a great point. So I want to separate that. But I'm also of that notion of, you know, you can't control if you're getting ice time or not. You know, maybe she should be a little more talented or whatever and fight for more ice time. But, you know, she can't control that. That's up to the coach. So, again, if you're a bench player in any sport, wouldn't you want to kind of give your team an advantage? And, again, taking the injury part out of it, because I agree with that. But just the trash talking, the point where, you know, you don't get to play. Let's talk about those players.
Listen, I'm all, like I said, I'm here for trash talk. I'll be like, you're a piece of crap. You ain't getting by me. That's different than saying, watch out, watch out, watch out. Knowing damn well nothing is coming towards that player. That is completely different for me. You know, that's taking it a little too far. You know, you're stopping the play. That would be akin to, you know, this might be an extreme example, but if you happen to be a bench player and you bring a whistle and you start blowing a whistle, so the other team thinks that, you know, a referee or someone has stopped the play, and that actually isn't the case. I think that's taking it too far. And from what I heard, that it was more in line with, you know, using that advantage. And again, in hockey, it didn't have anything to do, put it this way, there's situations where it has nothing to do with your skill, especially at this elite level, whether you're playing or not. Maybe you're just, for example, if we're talking baseball, you're in a pitching rotation and it's just not your game. You know, it's not that you're not a starter, you're just not today's starter. So it's more in that context. And I even if it wasn't, I think it has nothing to do with bench player, elite or, you know, elite all-star type player. I think you respect your opponent enough to give them your best, which also means that you have to respect them enough to want them to play their best. Because the competitors, the real competitors, they don't want Michael Jordan with the flu. They don't want Candace Parker with a sprained knee. They want her 100% so they can slay and know that they beat him, they beat her at their best. And when you're doing stuff like that, you're not allowing people to play at their best.
I hear you, EA. 100% hear you, but you're also yelling miss or brick, and when they shoot it, you say, hey, damn, like they made it.
No,
but
that's
you still
not.
Try,
that's not.
Right?
No. But players don't
no?
do that.
Okay.
Players don't right, do that. Right. You hear that in the stands. If anything, a player might say short. Short, or, you know, something like that, as in they can see that is not, but you don't do, no, that's not, it's not the same. It's not the same. For you to be chirping like you're in the stand, that's, I find it really uncalled for, you know?
All right. Fair enough. And Kyle, we'll get your last thoughts on this topic before we move on to the game.
I mean, my last thoughts are on EA on my team and not on the other team, but that's just me.
Right.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm an enforcer for sure.
I guess so.
I don't like it when people mess with my people.
We gotta remember that once we get a company athletic team, we'll have some great athletes on there. So it should be great. But all right, let's get back to the games. We have a couple more things to get to. So that was the first of two games for the Riveters. Buffalo had the weekend off after playing New York and defeating them 5-3. But Boston played Connecticut, the team that also traveled up to New York to play the Rivers on Sunday. But Kyle, you were at the Pride and Whale game. This was actually a fun game, although the score doesn't show it. This was pretty fun.
Yeah, this score definitely doesn't show it. I mean, this is a game that was 3-2, and the Whale continued to attack and continued to be in the game until 2 minutes to go in the game. So the Whale really came out on fire in this game and really attacked in the first period and definitely outplayed the Pride in the first period. Now looking back, you know, at some of the other statistics, that's not really a new thing. The Pride have really started great this year. They are much better in the second and third periods. But they came out on fire and got a goal from Dana Trevino in the first period, punched it through, got the goal from Lawrence, who got the start over Ott for the game. she, because of the back-to-back, Coach Bobby J decided to go with Slobodnik. But Slobodnik's still a good goalie, too. She already had a win under her belt earlier in the season. And, you know, it's just a matter of trying to find time for her when Ott's playing so well. You know, how do you say, okay, well, now I'm going to switch to the other goalie. But Slobodnik, in the end, ended up doing a great job with this game. The Whale, again, continued. The Pride did get the next goal, did tie it back up. Very shortly thereafter, took the lead 2-1, but the Whale continued to fight. And Kelly Stack, 30 seconds after the Jillian Dempsey goal, tied it back up at 2-2, and it stayed that way for about 8 minutes. And, again, just great back-and-forth hockey, and Decker was able to get a goal past the Connecticut goalie, past Lundberg, to take the 3-2 lead. And it stayed that way again. Great back and forth for that third period until the last 2 minutes. And Decker was able to get Dagger to make it 4-2 with 2 minutes to go, and then got the empty netter for the first home hat trick in the NWHL history. Mm-hmm. All of the hats have been on the road.
Yes, including Megan Fradelman's at Buffalo last season. Just as an example, you know.
That's a great example.
Hey, great thing on Twitter I saw this past week was a guy from BC Interruption that I know, a good friend of mine, Grant Salonzo, asking for a New York Riveters Megan Fadelman jersey because he wants customizing it, and they don't allow them to customize them this year. So very, very interesting. But
should have jumped on it like
he
I did.
Might be onto something there. Yeah, exactly.
I've got my Fartleman jersey, and I also have another recently retired jersey, and that's Fritz Ward. But before we get into the last game of the weekend for the NWHL, I do want to ask, Kyle, you were at the Boston game, and what's going on with Hillary Knight? Do we know officially, did she get injured again after the Four Nations Cup?
That's a great question, and I spoke with people who work for the team, and we asked that to Bobby J after the game as well, and there is no update. There is no timetable. There isn't. All he said to me was that she's getting healthier and doesn't have a timetable when she'll be back, and it really raises some question marks when she did play in the Four Nations Cup, but now she's back and she's at the game, but yet she's playing.
I don't know what's up with that, because I think she's only played one game officially this season. I believe she scored a goal and had an assist in that game. And then the game in Buffalo, I suppose, which was right after the salary cuts were announced, if I'm not mistaken, and someone please let me know if I am mistaken, I believe she was a healthy scratch for that game. Now, when it comes to New York, we knew that Burke and Kessel were going to be out, and they've been scratched from the lineup for a while. However, Hillary Knight was listed as a traditional scratch as opposed to a healthy scratch for that. So I was just curious to hear what the update is, and knowing also that Team USA and Team Canada have a game later this month, I think in like a week, actually. I'm just curious to see how that's going to fall into play there.
Yeah, I think it's a very questionable thing that's going on. I'm not really sure. Again, like you said, she seems to be okay. She's walking around. She's at the games, but yet she's not playing. And I don't know if it's just that they want to get her to 100% healthy before
right.
she plays.
Right.
Or does this have to do with some of the pay cuts and some of those issues?
Right. Yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, getting me from Team USA as well. So does she need the extra money, or is she afraid of being more injured? I'm not really sure.
Right. And I guess we'll have to see what happens when that roster comes out. And do want to give some updates from players I was able to speak to regarding the salary cuts from obviously New York, but also Buffalo. But first, let's go into what I, without bias, do truly believe was the game of the weekend. This was an exciting game. You have Boston played at home, defeated the Connecticut Whale 5-2. Similar score, New York losing at home to Buffalo 5-3. The two teams who anyone who's watched cross ice pass, for more than 2.5 seconds knows that there is a rivalry that is brewing between the Boston Pride and the New York Riveters. So they come together. Sojun Shin gets the start for the third time. She's only ever started against Boston and was pulled in both of those games. So lots boiling up, not to mention Morgan Fritz Ward, number 11. It's her last game of her career, of her professional career, for now. So lots of storylines coming into the game. No Amanda Kessel, no Hillary Knight. What's going to go down? Well, I'll tell you what went down. A 3-2 win for Boston, shootout style. They get the first two goals within the first 4 minutes. One of my favorite love-to-hate players, Megan Duggan, completely just collected right on the doorstep and beat Shin. And then Alex Carpenter, my goodness, a shorty, just completely fooled Shin, got her upper shelf, just slung it right by her. So Shin's in a hole, 2-0 in the first. Then, again, for anyone who watches Cross Ice Pass, in Boston Pride fashion, off of the faceoff, the New York Riveters were able to find Bray Ketchum, completely fooled Brittany Ott. And so now we have a 2-1 game going into the first period. Now, we talked about this earlier. Boston is known to really get hot in the second period. So, of course, New York fans get a little nervous, not knowing what to expect. However, it was the Riveters that would score again in the second period. The Boston Pride did not score at all in the second period. So now we're tied going into the third. It remains that way going into overtime. It remains that way. We go into a shootout. And unfortunately, I believe out of three shots, the only person who got a shot on frame for New York was Kaylee Fracken. But Brittany Ott was all over that, makes the glove save. Sojun Shin comes up huge. After those first two goals, she was hot. However, it was Zoe Hickel who was able to put it away. And again, the Boston Pride remain undefeated. Heartbreaker of a loss. Morgan Fritz Ward's last game. Did you catch any of this game, fellas? What were your thoughts?
Go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, this was an unbelievable game. I mean, any opportunity that you have to not only play hockey, then to go to overtime, then to go to the shootout. I love the shootout. I'm one of the hockey fans that when they went to the shootout, I thought it was a great idea in hockey to determine.
In hockey, not soccer.
Because I think that it's a great way to finish the game. I want to see a winner in hockey. So I think it was an awesome game, and the Pride just did not offensively overwhelm the Riveters like they have in other games. And I think that's a real testament to the Riveters' defense in this game and to Shin on this.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, this was, like you said, EA, probably one of the best games of the year, to be honest. I mean, to go to a shootout with
this.
So, the best game of the year. And, you know, to go to a shootout with going into the weekend, the top two teams in the league. You kind of expected this, and you wanted to see the Riveters kind of get the measuring tape of where they are with the Pride. And just think about a game with Fitzgerald on her game playing. You know, I think you said it perfectly. Shin got the start, and she's gotten a lot of starts where she's gotten pulled. So this was sort of a redemption, and I was really happy for her just to get that. And you saw her excitement on Twitter after as well. So that's awesome for New York to see how far they've come. But it also shows you that Boston, you know, they have some weaknesses.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Riveters, they've had to come from behind. And as a franchise, you know, that's something that the team is used to. But I thought there was just so much fight. This was an intense game. Neither team let up, you know, ever. Neither team let up. And I thought – given that no one scored, you know, into the third and in overtime, I think it was just an exciting game. I was surprised, you know, that the teams could even stand up for the, or, you know, on their skates, upright on their skates going into the shootout, because the energy was so intense. There were moments where in the Barnabas Health Hockey House, it was silent, not because it wasn't an exciting game, but you were afraid to breathe too loud, lest you miss something. There were so many amazing plays. And, you know, I've talked a lot about Brittany Ott not getting a lot of shots on goal. And I've also talked about the Riveters needing to get more shots on goal. There were times going into, particularly in the third, where they were going, you know, shot for shot. Officially, we see that Boston had 35 shots on goal, New York Riveters 28. Sojung Shin had a .943 save percentage, where Brittany Ott had a .929 save percentage. So, this was just a clash of the absolute titans. And speaking to Shin after the game, you know, she was disappointed that she couldn't hold on, you know, for a little bit longer for her team, knowing that it was an emotional night, Fritz Ward retiring, coming off of a tough loss. But I asked her, I said, you know, knowing that you've been pulled from games before against Boston, giving up those early goals, What got you back into the game? And she said, you know, I essentially what she was saying is, I was frustrated, you know, but I had to find a way to work through it. And she definitely did that. It was just lights out. And it wasn't as though, you know, again, this is Boston. They were giving it to her. There were times where, you know, a few unlucky bounces on Boston's side, crossbar hit, ping, you know, things, you know, goal going off the moorings and, you know, Jordan Smelker just missing being able to slam it home. This was exciting. I don't know if it's going to be – well, everyone makes the playoffs, but all I know is if these two teams see each other in the playoffs, whether it's in the first round or in the final, and they play like this and we get some of those injured players back, oh, baby, it's going to be exciting.
Well, and as you said, like, their legs were still going after all of that. Not to mention they had just – both teams had just played the day before.
Exactly.
So for them to still be fighting all the way through this game was absolutely amazing. And it's just – again, it's a true testament of athletes that are on both of these teams.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Kyle, in your article today for the Pride recap, you talked about Slobodnik talking about what it meant for her to give up those goals and kind of turn it around. And we saw Shin, you know, minus those two, that little two-minute period in that first frame, I think she played probably a lot better than Ott did. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's so much to be said about the mental game, especially of a goalie.
Yes.
And she certainly was able to, you know, kind of just cool herself, calm herself down, and stay within this game. And you know, as EA said, she's been pulled in games before. So that's on her mind as well. And she didn't let that stop her. She didn't.
Not at all.
She didn't have that in her mind. She just went out there and tried to be the best goalie she could be. And I think she was, yeah, absolutely, she was the best on that night.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, though, that you bring up, Lewis. We could also say the same thing about Levier the night before. She gets the start. She did get the win against New York in that second game in the back-to-back in Buffalo, but she's also been pulled a lot. And I love how this year the coaches and the GMs letting these women play, my goodness, especially in goal. You know, Levier gets the start. We see a back and forth in Buffalo. We see a back and forth in New York. We see a back and forth in Boston. And I just think that this is showing, again, we already know what happened with the postseason awards last year. It was a clean sweep by Boston. But I think what some of us, why that made some of us upset is that we're starting to see, well, first, let's be honest, the play and the competitiveness and the skill level has definitely increased from one season to another. But now we're seeing teams play around with things. And this is so exciting. exciting. It's absolutely exciting. We have teams that are also, you know, they're dressing practice players because of injury. And for the competition to still be this heightened, and we're still getting into it. We're not even, you know, I wouldn't even say we're really midway yet. So I just think this bodes well, which really means that I hope the league can figure out some things. As I mentioned, spoke to a few players. It does seem like, with the exception of Boston, I didn't speak to a representative from Boston, but it does seem like, at least on the Buffalo side in New York, that the league has spoken to the players. From Madison Packer, we heard that the league and the players have come to an agreement. There is going to be more transparency between the players and the league. However, any agreements that they've decided on, they have also agreed, both parties, to keep that confidential. No addendums have been signed, so presumably they're operating under some kind of an agreement. And, you know, we're hearing that there might be some things in the works as far as fundraising. We see that the Connecticut Whale, who will have their first home game of the season this weekend on Saturday, they're opening availability for people to host parties where Whale players are there and other things like that. I think we'll start seeing that, whether it's clinics or fundraisers and stuff like that. But again, when you see such great hockey, you really want to see the league be successful, one, because of the product, but then also, you know, it's tough. We heard stories such as players having to move back home. Harrison Brown, he confirmed that although he thought that's what he was going to have to do, he was able to make it work. But there are other people, obviously Morgan Fritz Ward. She had the opportunity to go back to school. Retirement was something she was going to have to think about after this season anyway. But when the cuts come and you're paying what we pay here in New York, she made a choice to pursue other options. So I don't know, fellas, that's kind of the wrap up what I'm hearing from players. But where do you stand when it comes to what we know as far as where the NWHL is?
It's the same from people as well. And it's just a case of, as you said, trying to make it work for themselves. And, you know, there's a lot of players that we may see more of those practice players who weren't getting as much opportunity to play in games be able to play. Because if, let's say, they are back home and they can't make it to Buffalo for a game because they live in Maine or in New Hampshire, then they might not be traveling with the team for that weekend.
Yeah, and again, it's like you, EA, I'm hoping for the best, you know, because there are so many talented athletes in this league and, you know, who I personally just admire for doing what they do. And it's incredible to see it as a fan. It's better to do it as a journalist. And it's really fun. And to see it go away would, you know, for me, it'd crush me, honestly, just being real about it, because we kind of grew up with the NWHL. We kind of were there when they first talked about it and followed it through. And it's hard to see players like Fritz Ward leave. It's hard to see Farley not be able to come back. You know, and, you know, I grew up watching Alex Carpenter. So to see her have to leave a professional league would be like, whoa, like, no, this is terrible. So I'm hoping for the best, and I'm glad that there's no addendum signed, because I think the players deserve to kind of have the upper hand here in this whole good faith kind of contract that they have unsigned, I guess, is what I like, because now the players get to control it a little more than they did before, and I think that's going to be huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that Ashley Johnston Stretch said as well. And I think you also make a good point. You know, there's people that grow up watching these women through the NCAA, you know, different tournaments and teams. And if this weekend was any indication, it's only going to get better. I mean, let's talk about what happened on the NCAA side.
Absolutely. Great transition there, EA. We had incredible matchups, two top five matchups with Wisconsin. Number one, Wisconsin, going up against number two, Minnesota, defending champions. And number three, St. Lawrence, going up against number five, Clarkson. Clarkson, a team that won the national championship a couple years prior. and look to have, you know, are looking to be one of the best teams in the country as well. So let's start with that Wisconsin, the border battle between Wisconsin and Minnesota. In game one, the Gophers take it 2-0, an incredible matchup there. And then game two, a very different story here as Wisconsin, the Badgers find their offense and score 8 goals on 2 of the Gophers' goalies to win that matchup and split the series between both teams. They remain where they are in the rankings as of this morning. So there's a lot to take from here. So, Kyle, what are you thinking? Is it more of a big statement for Wisconsin, or do you see Minnesota still has the upper hand in this matchup?
Well, I think what we saw last year and what we know of Wisconsin, they are a defensive team that can shut down a great offense. And fortunately, what they were able to do in game two was shut down Minnesota enough that they were able to put goal in and win that game pretty handedly. If they're going to score offensively like that, they're going to be the team to beat. If they're going to just be a team that doesn't allow, then they're not going to be able to do it. And unfortunately, that was game one versus game two. And, you know, Minnesota is a solid team, but we have to remember that Minnesota did lose some huge pieces last year. And I don't just mean scoring from Amanda Kessel, but I do mean goaltending from Amanda Leve as well. And for them to win the first game, that was huge to shut down the strong Wisconsin Badger team. And you know, you got to believe that Minnesota felt great going into game two. Unfortunately, when you have a player like Sarah Nurse who can dominate the game,
my goodness,
and she doesn't always, but she did in this game. You know, it's tough to beat any team with a firepower like that.
And EA, your thoughts? I mean, when you think about the WCHA, we've talked all along about how powerful the conference is, and when you see two games like this, I mean, what are your thoughts? Obviously, that second game could have been a fluke. We might not see something like that again in this series in a long time. But what are your thoughts about these two teams battling at it?
I mean, I think rivalries, we love rivalries, especially when they're clean rivalries. No inappropriate chirping. Just had to put that out there one more time for good measure. No, but seriously, a good rivalry, you got to love a good rivalry. And the WCHA is full of rivalries. I mean, again, the teams that are playing in that conference are synonymous with women's hockey, in particular. So I think, but again, we talk about it all the time, regardless of what sport we're playing about, we're talking about, excuse me. You know, and on any given day, if you're not focused, if you allow people to get under your skin, that's going to impact the outcome. And so was it that? Was it that people were tired? Were people losing their focus? Who knows? But, you know, you got to be able to buckle down. And so while it's sometimes unfortunate to see lopsided games, it's also a part of the game. And now it's going to be how these teams bounce back.
And don't you think Minnesota is going to remember this as they head into the WCHA tournament? If they see Wisconsin again, do they come back with a revenge on their mind, or do they come back with, oh no, they can beat us 8-2?
Well, I mean, I think it can go either way. It depends, you know, what's going to motivate you. Is it like, oh, you know, not never again? Or is it we have to never again, but we also have to remember what happened last time, you know, because if we're not focused, then this can easily get out of hand. So I think it kind of keeps you honest, to also be redundant. you know, you have to play your game, and you have to bring your game every single time.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, go ahead, Kyle.
I was just going to say that sounds honestly honest to me.
Honestly.
Well played. Well, and I think when you think about these two teams, and this has always been the criticism of the NCAA tournament, is that when you talk about a team like Wisconsin having to play a team like Minnesota, and they have to play each other in the semifinal because based on their geographical location, do you think we'll see an end to that this year when the committee comes together?
I hope so. I mean, what would you rather see? Would you rather see the best two teams play in the semifinals or the best two teams play in the final? So I hope so.
You know, and I go back and forth. I'm just thinking what's happened on either side, men's or women's, to college basketball. Oh, my gosh. Tearing up these conferences primarily because of football has ruined. I will never forgive whomever made the decision to absolutely ruin the Big East. And, you know, I get, you know, what you're saying, the excitement of the final, but let's also, to take a page out of Gino's book, you know, then maybe everyone else just has to kind of be ready for that. And you're not guaranteed a spot in the final. So if you want to get to the final, you got to get through some of the best. And that's just how the cookie crumbles. And, you know, I don't know. I'm very leery of cutting up conferences and things of that nature because of how teams are performing now. Yes, there's a likelihood that these teams are going to continue to perform, but what's the incentive then to make all of the other programs continue to up their game? And then you have lopsided conferences all over again, and then we have to do this all over again. I don't know. I like rivalries. I like local rivalries. I think those are good for the sport. And sometimes, yeah, they really stink. But when they're on, oh, man, that's a loyal fan base. And if we're talking about viewership and butts in seats, that's good for the game.
Absolutely. And you talk about Kyle, that Minnesota offense, Kelly Panik, Danny Camernesi. I mean, these players, when we're talking about their futures, Camernesi is going to, I believe she's a draft pick in the NWHL.
Yep.
So when you think about these players, and to your point, EA, seeing them grow up in that college game and looking forward to what they do next, that's kind of what gives me the chills. Is, you know, these are phenomenal athletes that we get to see and cover on a collegiate level, but they mm-hmm. aren't really nationally known. And, you know, obviously our job here is to do that. But again, when they don't get that recognition, mm-hmm. it's tough. And this border battle, you know, game one wasn't on TV, but game two was. And mm-hmm. when people watch an 8-2 game, some people might be turned off of that. So when you're thinking about going into the tournament, what can we do better, not only us as MyW Sports, but networks, to kind of promote these games? I mean, we saw St. Lawrence tie Clarkson 3-3 and then fall 4-1. That's 3-5. And, I mean, how many people knew about that matchup? Minnesota mm-hmm. Duluth, they had a tough game, too, against St. Cloud's 3-2 game. Maybe not Boston College this week. They kind of pummeled Providence 8-0. But even Northeastern against Vermont, a New England game, that wasn't on TV. North Dakota versus Ohio State, big-time hockey schools, that wasn't on TV. So I guess my question to you guys is, what do we do next? What's the next step to promote the college game to help promote the professional game?
Well, you know, it's cross promote. And I think an easy setup here is the Nurse family. So we go from NCAA hockey, where Sarah Nurse is killing it, rookie of the month, I believe, for November. And then we see Kia Nurse again. We talk about UConn, you know, they are a team that is unbeaten, however, lost their number one ranking this week. So what's up with that? You know, and again, that goes to what's happening in women's basketball. I think it is because a lot of people are looking at what South Carolina is doing, looking at what Maryland is doing, and they're questioning whether UConn, this lineup, is the number one team in the nation. And right now they're not.
Well, and I would argue that the votes came very, very, very close there. And, you know, I almost think that they shouldn't be, but they are number one. They just, today it got changed again and they are number one. Yeah. They beat out Notre Dame by 2 votes. I mean, it was ridiculously close, and yet I don't see why they moved ahead of Notre Dame, because Notre Dame was number one and Notre Dame is still undefeated. So, I understand that UConn beat ranked people, and so it looks like they're doing well, but they beat ranked people that are in the 14 range, in the higher ranges. they didn't beat, you know, a South Carolina or Maryland, or like you said, some of these other teams that are going to be there at the end of the year when we really need to talk about who's the best of the best. And this UConn team is not what it's been the last 4 years. And I think that the writers just got overzealous with giving UConn the respect that they've gotten over the past 4 years, and so we're going to move them up to number one. Well, why don't we hold up a little bit and wait and see what UConn does against a South Carolina, or if they get to play a Notre Dame or some of these other teams that really are going to challenge them this year.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And, you know, I go back and forth on that because I hear what you're saying. However, how much does that legacy matter? You have four straight titles. No one's been able to strip UConn in the last four seasons, not to mention the ongoing record that Geno has had. So when a team is still undefeated, 7-0, and they have a history, they have a legacy, they have all the makings of a team that is expected and has pretty much met that expectation year after year after year, you know, maybe that does make a difference. But, you know, maybe, again, it's just creating, you know, it's pouring more fuel on this boiling fire in women's NCAA basketball. I don't know what's going to happen this year because we have mentioned it on this podcast. We're all UConn fans, but I don't think any UConn fan is having any delusions that this UConn team is what it was last year. But we've said that about UConn teams of the past. And there's something about Geno, there's something about that program that's able to bring it through. But I like what I'm seeing out of Maryland. I like what I'm seeing out of South Carolina. And these are teams, and Notre Dame, of course. Notre Dame in a little bit of a different pool just because I think that they've been an elite team for a while. But Maryland trying to make it to the top. South Carolina trying to, you know, legitimize all the hype that they've been getting, you know. And so what does the weekend and how I should say, how does their performance this weekend play into that?
And I mean, the good news is we're not going to have to wait very long to find out, because in 2 days on Wednesday, we get to see UConn head to Notre Dame and take on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish at 7 o'clock on ESPN2. So when Lou, to get back to your question, how do we help promote these college games? So that way, when we follow these players now into the, we'll talk about the WNBA. When we follow these players up, we've already seen them for multiple years. This is how. Go watch on ESPN2 this Wednesday at 7 o'clock. Notre Dame, who arguably should the number one team in the country, and UConn, who has taken over the number one because of what they've done for the past 4 years. We'll see who the best of the best is.
Oh, baby. It's going to be awesome with a capital A.
All right. Well, just to play devil's advocate for a second before we move on from this basketball conversation, there's been a lot of talk about UConn and their past references and all this nonsense. UConn defeated FSU, a top 10 team right now. UConn defeated then number 2 Baylor by double digits. They defeated DePaul, a 15-ranked team. They just demolished Texas in the Jimmy V Classic, ranked 14th by almost 20 points. Yes, they do play Notre Dame, but Notre Dame has only played one ranked opponent, and that was Washington, and that was a 9-point game. All right? Let's just throw that out there.
Ooh, all right, but don't forget what Washington did last year. So, you know.
True.
Yeah,
true.
Kelsey Plum.
Hey, I'm a big fan of Kelsey Plum. Hey, Kelsey Plum is NCAA MVP. Absolutely.
She's coming. She's thirsty.
Some other scores to get note of before we move on. Number 3, South Carolina lost to unranked Duke. Big win for the Blue Devils, trying to get, like as EA mentioned, back to prominence. Duke used to be a great program. They've kind of fallen off the past couple of years. Big win for their program. But South Carolina only drops to 6, so they remain in that top seed race. And another big upset, Oral Roberts defeats Oklahoma in overtime. That was a huge game as well for Oral Roberts. All right, let's get right into NCAA College Cup action. This was incredible. I was able to watch a lot of these games, EA and USC West Virginia. Now, I did say whoever won Duke versus West Virginia would win the championship, and although that didn't happen, I am I'm so proud of those Mountaineers. You have to give them credit. I mean, making it to their first College Cup, making it to the finals of that College Cup. Unfortunately, they fell to USC, who won their second national championship by a score of 3-1. EA, Morgan Andrews, she's going somewhere in the NWSL next year. She's going to be one of those players we are going to watch, and we're going to drool because she's so talented.
Man. Who has the number one pick this year? Oh, dear. Are you sure? Because I don't know. There's been a lot of – the Breakers are not
known
for –
There's been a lot of trades, but I think
– Yeah, we got to – I got to look at that
list. I think we still hold the number one pick. I'm pretty sure we still hold the number one pick.
I'm pretty sure it's not Sky Blue. So,
didn't they actually trade and get, like, four other first-round picks?
Yeah, there was some craziness going on, which might have explained the last few years. Yeah, but hopefully, I mean, this is a good year to have those number one picks. I mean, I've said it before the last few weeks. This has been an amazing soccer season, and I was a little emotional. I was all in my feelings watching the Riveters play Boston, but I appreciated the tweets coming from the MyW Sports account for this one. And you know, we're talking about West Virginia, but USC, second national championship in program history, first since 2007. This team was able to really push through, and it's a team that in a lot of other sports you always see as a contender more or less, but I'm not sure that people were really giving USC the respect that they deserved coming into the College Cup.
I absolutely agree with that, EA. I mean, they were a two seed, but you know, they had a tough bracket, and once some chaos kind of happened, it benefited them. And not only that, they proved themselves with that big win over Auburn. You know, a lot of people were saying, well, this is the second time they're playing Auburn. Auburn played them really tough that first time. This might be a turnaround game for the Tigers. But USC stood tall. You know, they came in and they fought in that matchup. And I was impressed with it. Even in the semifinals, a big win against, a Georgetown team that only lost twice. And a Georgetown team that held possession in that first half. And, you know, until USC broke through, you couldn't really see a team taking that matchup yet. You thought it might go to PKs. But you're 100% right. A lot of people knew West Virginia this year. They were number one. They were the number one overall seed in the tournament. They deserved to get here, and they should have gotten here, especially after last year's letdown. But nobody expected USC. And you must be a USC fan if you did, because it was an incredible run, and the way they did it, you know, to do the shutout after shutout from Auburn against Georgetown and against one of the most potent offenses, you give up, what, one goal? It's incredible. You score three against a team that only gave up 9 goals all season. I mean, USC definitely deserved it, and much credit to their goalkeeper, Sammy Jo Prudhomme. She's the Pac-12 goalkeeper of the year, but she made some huge saves down the stretch, and really one point blank save that would have made it 2-2, and really just turned tide at the end of that game.
Yeah. I mean, again, I can't speak enough about this class. I think it's going to be, and another thing is particularly for, I guess it would be the Big Ten Conference. You know, there's some of these young women who we didn't even get to see play because they were playing with the women's U20 team. So it's going to be an exciting, winter when we get to see that college draft. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, yeah. And really exciting time. Again, congratulations to the USC Trojans for winning their second program national championship in soccer. A really incredible feat. And we're going to see Katie Johnson. We're going to see Morgan Andrews. Remember those names during that draft, as EA mentioned, because they're going to go places, and we're going to see them for a long time to come. EA, you brought this up to us, and I haven't really had a chance to look at it, but news coming out of the Canadian Women's Soccer League team.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've spoken and have written about teams as Team USA was prepping for the Olympics, whether it was Colombia, Costa Rica, teams that were inspired by the equal play, equal pay conversation that has been swirling around the U.S. Women's National Team. Just really quickly, the U.S. Women's National Team and the USSF, United States Soccer Federation, are still in negotiations. They have until December 31, 2016. That is when the CBA ends. But in the midst of these conversations, a lot of other federations have been looking to see what they can do, not only for themselves, but for the sport. And so Canada, Diana Matheson, you know, Erin McLeod, and a lot of the, obviously, Sinclair, a lot of these players that we get to see in the NWSL coming off of back-to-back bronze medals in the Olympics are now using their celebrity and their success to create a union. It is said to be the first women's athletic union of its kind in Canada. This is Diana Matheson speaking that when she's not in Washington, when she's not with the Canadian national team, you know, this is a young 30-something-year-old, again, Olympian, three-time Olympian, who has to, at 32, move home with her parents because through her federation and certainly in the NWSL, she doesn't make enough money to have a stable home, given the travel that she's doing. You know, it doesn't make much sense to buy a place or rent a place that you can't afford. So instead of doing that, she's at home, you know, and she wants to see the younger generation come up where they can earn a living so that they don't have to go home with their parents, is what she said. Also, Erin McLeod said that there are times when she has to, where she doesn't know exactly what her male counterparts make, but she doesn't like thinking about it because she can, even without knowing exact facts and numbers, she knows enough to know that it's not equal. And it's something that really, you know, gets to her because, again, Team Canada, I honestly don't even know if they have a men's soccer team. That's how much I've never heard of them. And maybe I'm biased because, I do watch the women's side more. But if someone told me that Team Canada didn't have a men's team, I'd believe them. So, again, these are women who have gold medals. They're performing at the highest level, arguably, in the NWSL, and they are being successful, but are living at home with their families. There is no 18-year-old professional soccer player that happens to be a man that is doing that. There is no 18-year-old professional soccer player who happens to be on a national team that has to do that. These are athletes that can afford to have their own space when they're coming home from college, when they're performing on their national teams, and that's not the case with women. So kudos to Team Canada for putting together a players' union for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's well said. And, you know, you mentioned some of the great players and you talked about what the U.S. team meant to other nations. And I think that's a huge point. We talked about it with Colombia. We talked about it with South Africa and a whole bunch of other nations. And I think it's huge to keep that going, to keep that conversation alive, because, you know, there are teams like the women's team in Afghanistan that are getting national attention and international attention. And that's what we need. We need more teams like that to get that prominence and to be recognized. So some of the great players who are scared of playing or who can't afford to play say, hey, no, you know what? This is more affordable for me to do. Let me go and do it now.
Absolutely.
And we also have some other news coming out of this time, the NWSL. Anson Dorrance, the head coach of North Carolina, is trying to get a team of the NWSL into North Carolina. Obviously, North Carolina, a very huge soccer following and a great soccer state. EA, we heard about pro fast pitch expansion talks. We also heard about the National Women's Soccer League expansion talks. And, you know, the league has tried to keep it really, you know, under wraps, I should say. Jeff Plush not mentioning a lot about it when he's asked. But what are you hearing now?
Well, you're hearing that at the least, Anson Dorrance is saying that he is enthusiastic about being supportive of women's football or soccer in North Carolina. This is a 21-time national champion. Didn't make it to the College Cup this year. That is UNC Tar Heels. However, and this is a quote that we get for Jennifer Gordon, who I believe writes for The Equalizer. And Anson is quoted as saying, "I'm behind a franchise that's being reestablished in Cary, North Carolina in the NWSL. I don't think we will launch this year. I think we will launch next year. And trust me, I'm doing everything I can to encourage our owner to be part of this, because I know it's going to impact very positively in my community and the community of kids that play locally, but hopefully nationally as well." So Anson does see North Carolina as a hotbed for soccer and is committed to doing his part to bring a professional team to North Carolina. I think another thing to watch is to see what's going to happen with Mia Hamm and company, who have the new franchise in Los Angeles, and to see if we'll see some expansion in that route as well. I mean, who wouldn't want Mia Hamm involved again in women's soccer? So I'm hoping that we'll get some news there as well eventually.
Always eventually. But yeah, that's a great point. When you think about the colleges in North Carolina, I mean, Elon, we'll throw that one out there. You think about North Carolina, you think about Wake Forest, Duke, so many great institutions that provide quality soccer players. And it's going to be really fun. And then, as you mentioned, our Monday motivation actually came from the Mia Hamm. It's going to be really cool to see when it happens. Obviously, I think they've been keeping it quiet because they don't want to tease something that they're not ready for. But when it does happen, I think we are going to be in for a treat with some of the teams that come up.
Yeah, I think so as well. And this comes into play also while we're getting other teases as far as national players who might be looking to play in Europe. So I don't know what's going on in women's soccer. A lot of it is still speculation. But what it does sound like is people are excited to grow the game. And as we said, whether it's women's hockey, NCAA basketball, sometimes you need a little competition to get the best out of the product, to get the best out of the ownership, and definitely not only to get the best out of the players, but to give them the best opportunities. So there might be some shakeups in the next few years, but hopefully it'll work out for the best, and we will see whether it's building more unions, expanding more teams, or even kind of sharing the wealth, so to speak, so that we do get to hear about some of the other Premier Leagues, whether it's in Australia, in France, in Spain, and really grow the game.
Absolutely. And Kyle, I'll bring you in on this. A lot of expansion talks across the games. When you think about the NWSL, obviously, we're big Breakers fans, but there's been a kind of rapid growth, especially since this past Olympics, for soccer. And what are your thoughts on these expansions?
Again, I think you hit it right on. I think if there's going to be expansion, you got to look at where soccer is already, one of the four sports, one of the sports that everybody is playing. North Carolina is one of those places where everybody says, "Oh, I'm going to North Carolina for a tournament," or, "Oh, I really want to go to North Carolina to play college soccer." And the same can be said about California. We have no California team right now.
Mm-hmm.
So to
mm-hmm.
be able to add something in either a San Diego, a Los Angeles, somewhere in that somewhere in California, that will just expand the NWSL all the way across the country as well. I think that's just going to be an awesome idea no matter what. I want more soccer.
Absolutely.
So.
EA, any last thoughts before we wrap up here?
I would just say that both of those places, Los Angeles, North Carolina, are also huge for softball. So with softball returning to the Olympics, I'm excited to see what the expansion for professional softball is going to look like.
And Cal, I'll swing it over to you for the same last thought.
I would put a softball team in every city in the country. That's just my opinion. But yes, I agree. Somewhere in the California area, somewhere more teams in Florida, I think they can handle it with all the softball that's being played in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Absolutely. So as always, we'd like to leave you with our Motivational Monday quote, as we mentioned this week from Mia Hamm, quote unquote, or quote, "Somewhere behind the athlete you've become, the hours of practice, and the coaches who have pushed you, is that little girl who fell in love with the game and never looked back. Play for her," said the Mia Hamm. So, as always, we appreciate you listening in from wherever you are on iTunes, SoundCloud, or listening live right now. Follow us on social media at MyWSports as we bring you Motivational Monday, Top Player Tuesday, Women in History Wednesday, Throwback Thursday, and, of course, Friday Favorites. If you have any ideas for these days on social media, please let us know, send us a message, or DM us, email us. Visit us on MyWSports.com, and as always, give us a follow at MyWSports on social media. You could always make a donation at GoFundMe.com/MyWSports. Have a great week, and tune in next week for MyWSports Sports Monday.